I think it'll be fun just breaking down the process that we had on this project, because it's so different from the book we're working on right now.
I agree with that. I feel like that's a really good beginning.
That's a good start. I agree. Okay, that's our start. This is such a different process. Yeah.
Here's how I live my life. Mm-hmm. I don't tell people the name of our book that we're working on right now. That isn't The Evil Life.
Yeah, me neither. Hold on one second. Hey, okay, so I have a visitor. Hey.
Hello.
He can't hear you because I have my
headphones. I know, but on. I'm still saying hi. I'm being polite. You know?
That's nice. Nick says hello. So you don't tell people the name of that other story. Me neither. I don't think I've told anyone the name of it.
I mean, I tell them it's about koalas that are underwater. That's about all I tell.
Yeah, that's pretty much the thing. I've gone as far as I think I've drawn the comparison to G.I. Joe and to a certain extent the Ninja Turtles as well. Like, they're anthropomorphic. And they go underwater.
Yeah, it's like somewhere kind of in between the two, right?
Sort of trying to be a bit vague whenever I describe it. I think I've shown like a page. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, you reminded me. You know, I got a card from an editor at a book publisher that I should email about that project that shall not be named.
Yes.
From San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, cool. Like a legit like book publisher.
Yeah. Like really legitimate. Like I feel like I don't want to like put them on the spot on the episode, but I'll tell you afterwards, but like a legitimate, sure. Yes, quite.
More on that later.
Yeah. So, but you know what? We're not here to talk about the legitimate publisher or the underwater koalas. We're here to talk about The Evil Life.
Yes. Fun and just for the doing a book for the sake of doing a book, basically.
We did.
It grew so organically.
Yeah, and it's fun. I really enjoy telling people about how it grew, but I can never gauge if I'm expressing just how extensively this changed and went on for such a long period of time and kind of like it just kind of decided to do it on its own. I don't even feel like we made the choices at the time.
Yes. It's like at some point the characters got like a life of their own and just started to, that sounds so pretentious, but you know, it's that's sort of what happened, that the characters, they sort of started to tell their story on their own. Or maybe that's just my experience from you sending scripts. Like, oh, it's just writing itself. But I think that's... So, well, what people don't know is that the story was supposed to be short.
Very short. Oh, I just realized something else don't know.
10 pages.
They don't know which one of us is which yet.
You're right, because we just started talking. Oh, you go first.
Hi, I'm Nils Petter Norlin. And that's it.
And that's it. All right. But wait, so how about I state my name and then you...
Yeah, go ahead. Please do. Go ahead. Whatever your name is.
My name is also Nils Petter Norlin. And
you say it way better than I do.
And I do art, illustrations, whatever you want to call it, for The Evil Life. It's you go. I could ramble for all eternity.
And I'm Nick Marino, and I'm writing and lettering The Evil Life.
And it looks so good. Oh, and you do sound effects as well.
What you do looks so good. I feel like what I do, it's like halfway to looking as good as what you do. I'm not saying that to be like fishing for anything. I'm just being honest. I just really love looking at that artwork all the time.
It really comes together when the lettering's there. I mean, it's not Thank even you. The same book. I mean, especially I like choice of colors for instance, take chapter one. The fact that the TV has purple captions.
Oh, thanks.
It's just a nice touch. Whenever they narrate over the story.
I think we are. It's benefited by the fact that it's taken me so long to letter it that I tried out stuff that's been scrapped. I've lettered entire chapters that have been relettered because I just decided different ways of doing it would look even better. So I've been lucky that I've had a lot of time to do trial and error on it, and then ended up in a place where I feel like it's looking pretty solid. And it's weird too, you know, because I didn't anticipate this when we started putting the comic out. We made this decision maybe, 2 months ago to do this? It's weird that we, from my perspective, from the lettering perspective, I feel like we're putting out two different versions of this every time we put a new chapter out, because the letters move around a little bit and the aspect ratio of the panels change whether you're on Webtoon or you're reading it on nickmarino.net, which has like the panels as they were originally envisioned.
And we should probably mention why that is. I feel like I could split this conversation in another direction, but I just want to mention that not only have you done different iterations of the lettering on this, but you've also done different iterations on the script as well. Like the dialogue
has changed. The script has changed so much. Okay, so if we go back
just
to the beginning.
Evolved. And I just find that the dialogue now is, even though it was already good, and you still have like you've still captured sort of the essence of the original script with all of these scenes, you could just tell that you had so much more fun with just you're playing around with words. People have more distinct personalities through their dialogue. It's just gotten so much better from the. Compared to where we were with the original script and where we are now.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I feel like when I got – once I had all that art from you, which is – I think what do we have? Something like 400-something panels total?
Oh, yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
And when I – you know, when I was sitting there with everything and I was thinking to myself, okay, I got to go through and I got to make – I got to read back over the old scripts and make sure everything we're doing still matches up, because like you said, this grew really organically and changed a lot. And I just, you know, I really felt motivated to deliver the sort of tightest, best dialogue that I possibly could, because I love the art so much. I'm looking at it and I'm like, in a lot of ways, the story didn't – there are a lot of scenes in this where I feel like, if I don't do something where I really deliver with this dialogue, there's no point in putting it there. Because if I'm not making the panel any, if I'm not making that chapter any better, or I'm not making that chapter any feel richer, not better. If I'm not making that chapter feel like fuller with the dialogue, then why even do it? So like, I really wanted to kind of match that. I feel like you really elevated it from what I had imagined when I was writing some scripts, and then I wanted to try and match that with the dialogue,
and it really shows. I was always the one who suggested, well, if something doesn't work, we could just scrap it. Doesn't matter. We could cut like a chapter. That would be fine.
True.
But you having that sense of like responsibility over each and every scene, I'm just glad that you decided to not scrap any of these scenes, but instead go back and perfecting them over and over until they, as you said, like they were at their fullest. It made them better.
There's only one scene, and it wasn't even the entire scene, but I guess most of it, that we at this point don't have included, right? And that is a scene that actually would take place after our third chapter, which, as we're talking, is the most recent chapter that we've released.
Yes. Are we talking the space scene?
Yeah, the space race.
Space race. Well, that was sort of like me just randomly goofing around with...
It's great. I just felt like when I was looking at the alternating chapters and all that, I just didn't know where to put it.
It was... I don't know. I think what happened was, and I should probably just clarify, there's this brief scene in the story where the ship has just gone off-world after Is it chapter three? Yeah, chapter three.
By the way, yeah. I don't know. This isn't speaking. We started off talking about that story, which shall not be named. Yes. I haven't said the name of the character that we meet in chapter three yet.
No, I didn't either. I just said that.
I know
the,
you didn't.
The ship. Yes, I was just deliberately being.
Are we not saying the name? Should we say the name?
It's really inconsequential if we do, but. I'm just being on the safe side. If we're not saying the name yet, I guess we're not. Or are we?
Let's not. We could say the alien, right?
The alien creature in the tiny ship. There's this scene that was solely there to illustrate the speed of which the ship was traveling in by showing it basically winning a drag race between spaceships. And it was also me having fun with just adding like a ton of different classical spaceships that were watching this space, I guess, drag race. Yeah. And it just passes these two ships. They get so stunned by the fact that a small ship is traveling at this speed that they crash into each other. And we, for a brief moment, talked about having these two aliens coming back as adversaries for the small alien in the ship, blaming that alien for, man, so many characters without names, and then blaming that alien for having damaged their ships, something like that. It just didn't fit, and I'm glad we cut it, but I was also glad that I made it because it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well. I think who knows, maybe it won't get cut now. You know, now that we're talking about it, maybe...
Well, I mean, a whole scene dedicated to the fact that the ship was really, really... Just showing that the ship was really, really fast. It's not that important. But it is a fun scene, and I liked having... I think Alf's ship is somewhere in the background, and I think...
Oh, yeah.
And a bunch of other, like... Classic.
You know, I met ships. Alf at San Diego Comic-Con this weekend.
Really? Like,
it is the only time I've ever seen an Alf cosplay. I mean, the only time.
Wait, so legs and all, not just the torso, but...
This guy had a full... He was probably like 6 feet tall, and he had a full, giant, furry Alf costume. And I saw him... And he was taking a picture of somebody, and he took the helmet off afterwards because he's, like, suffocating in there. And I felt really bad, but I asked for a picture, and he was very generous and let me take a pic with him. And I was like, wow, I get it now. When people see a character they want to take a photo with and they, like, geek out real hard, I finally understand it.
Yeah. That's really nice. You should have given him a cat or something.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I should have.
Like... Sir,
poor guy must have been so hungry.
He was starving, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Never gets that cat.
So, yeah, these chapters. Yeah, like, yeah. So you're saying it's changed a lot. What I remember is that 7 years ago, I think.
It was a while, yeah.
We started talking about the story. It had a different name. The characters were basically the same.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the thing that's been consistent throughout the story. I think their personalities.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess I don't even know if we knew where they came from at that point. I don't know if that mattered. And it was going to be a story, just going to be three stories. And I think we envisioned them as eight 8-page stories. I feel like that sounds familiar to me. It was going to be 3 8-page stories.
It was something like that, like 8 to 10 pages. It was going to end up being roughly 30 pages.
Yeah. Probably, yes. I don't, at some point, I don't know when it was, I'm sure it's in our emails, we settled on this idea that every panel would be the same size. We weren't going to do page layouts. We were just going to do 16x9 panels.
I think pretty early on, because I think all, even the earliest pages were 16x9 by the six, yeah, in the 16x9 form factor. I don't think we ever did like a traditional comics page.
No, I don't think so either.
This project.
You know what I did find when I was going through my emails recently, posting something else on Twitter about the project? Mm-hmm. I didn't remember this, but you drew the bedrooms for the characters.
Oh, right. I designed their like apartment.
Yeah, to unlock their personalities. You drew their rooms. That was I don't know, maybe Hester didn't get one. I can't remember, but I definitely saw one for our alien and one for Gloom.
That's right. I think I don't remember if she did she get one. She's the most normal character.
Right.
In terms of like how she would decorate her room in terms of because she's not really into the same type of oddities that the other characters are, but I have to look that up.
I mean, it's been so long that we've been working on this and we've done so much stuff for it that I find myself forgetting entire chapters until I get to them and I've got to do something with them. You know, whether it's lettering or...
I feel like I'm part of the audience, especially since you sometimes change dialogue and move around panels before you do the final, like, edit on them before you put them up on Webtoons. It feels like almost like a new refreshing experience for me as well.
Well, I hope it's a I hope so far it's been a good refreshing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. But
unrefreshing
did,
whatever.
Did you say why we decided to go with the 16x9 aspect ratio?
No, we didn't talk about that. Although I feel like I think about it constantly and I feel like it was such a good idea.
Well, especially at the time, it only took a while for us to.
Yeah, imagine this is the world in 2012. What were things like in 2012? Nobody had heard Gangnam Style yet.
Oh, that's true.
What was like a popular movie? Avengers that was really popular. Yeah, people loved that movie. Yeah. We don't even have any Avengers anymore. They're like dead now.
Spoilers. Well, I mean, yeah. Sort of. Yeah.
You know, there's other stuff.
And smartphones. Smartphones were blowing up, basically.
They were getting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tablets were really just getting started, I feel like, then.
Yeah, like 2010, 2011. That's like where they started popping up.
That's the first time I had one. Yeah.
Yeah, I got my my first iPad in 2012. That was definitely popular at the time.
I have webcomics to thank for my first iPad. Because I won an iPad from a webcomics directory. It's a really weird circumstance. It was thanks to Super Haters, which was the first thing that you and I ever worked on together.
Right, and... Well, technically, no. We did one other thing.
We did something else. Oh, maybe
Are we going back to like how we started?
I don't know. Maybe I'm forgetting. Was there something before that?
Yes. You had this. So originally, how we started working together was, I drew this different webcomic.
Right.
I think we just called it the Yamagato webcomic, and. This was back in, I think, 2010, I think. And this, I started working with some people that you know that did a different podcast called the Yamagato's Industries Business Report. And at the time I was on the same web forum as these guys on the web page where they published their podcast, and I just for fun started like drawing like whatever people wanted me to draw. I basically went on the forum and said, hey, ask me to draw anything, and one of their listeners asked me to do like a couple of pages based on their podcast. Like, he gave me a script and I drew a couple of strips based on that. They thought, oh, this is cool, let's do like an actual legitimate webcomic based on this. And so we started doing this webcomic, and long story short, that's sort of how you got to know that I guess existed, and you reached out to me and asked me to join this. I don't know what you call them, but you had these like art submission things that you did where asked people,
was it bad guys, Project Basement?
Yeah, Project Basement. Yes. And it was called, I think, Bad Guys Doing Good. And you said you could basically pick like a bad guy and have that bad guy do something good. And I picked MODOK, of course. And I think him helping an old lady get a cat out of a tree, I think. And you basically, you have time to do it. And I was like, bam, here it is, like immediately. And I think I maybe it was the immediacy that I basically finished and sent it to you or something, but you basically replied back, hey, do you want to collaborate on something else? That's sort of how I remember it, at least. I think that's the first thing we did. That
sounds like a good story. I'm going to find that MODOK image, and I'm going to put that in the post of this podcast.
The broccoli, you know what? I have it. I just searched for it. I think you called it like the broccoli tree.
Broccoli
is Skype. Is Skype working? All right. Can you see
it? Yeah. I just saw it. You just sent it to me. It looks good.
So that was, I think, the first thing. In the email, it's from 2011. So this was before the comic. And then you asked, I think you asked me to collaborate on The Evil Life. I mean, on Super Haters first.
Right.
Maybe. And then we did The Evil Life. Or we did them simultaneously.
Might have been simultaneous. It's kind of a blur for me. Maybe we've been doing The Evil Life for 8 years, not 7 years. I don't know.
No idea anymore. But there it is, the MODOK bad guy doing good. Oh, apparently she had multiple cats as well. I remembered it as one, but she has like four cats. Anyway, so I think that's sort of how we got started. And the reason why it took so long originally was because I was doing both the webcomic and The Evil Life as well. So I had two comic projects.
Well, you were also...
Simultaneously.
You were in school back then, right?
Well, actually, back in 2011, I was on parental leave.
Oh, for your first child.
For my first child, which was like for 8 months or something like that. So I had plenty of time, but in 2012, I mean, he slept and stuff. But in 2012, yes, I was in school. So, which also meant I had plenty of time.
Yeah, you've done so much stuff, I feel like, in your life.
Yeah, well.
Since this comic has started.
I mean, 7 years, I guess. Yeah. But the webcomic, eventually, I don't remember what happened. I think the website, the comic was published on thegameheroes.com, and I think sort of when the website died down, the comic did as well. But we just kept working on The Evil Life.
Yeah, we just kept going. We had no idea what we were going to do with it. We were like, we're going to make comics that are going to look good on a smartphone, a tablet, and a laptop. And we thought we were like really like we'd like crack the code, like come up with some magic formula. for a digital comic, I feel like. At least that's how I felt about it.
But you know what? It's still kind of true. I mean, seeing every single panel designed for that form factor, it is, in my opinion, the optimal way of reading.
And it looks pretty good on all of them. I just wish that this has been my biggest struggle with posting The Evil Life as a webcomic the way it is. In my mind, the way it would work is you would see the artwork filling up your entire screen, and you'd just tap on the left or the right to move to the next panel or go back and reread a panel. And it just doesn't exist like that for us currently, unless maybe at some point if we do this on Comixology Submit or something like that, that would capture that feature. But it's funny, we thought that people would really be into this like horizontal format, and it turns out that vertical really ended up being the thing that, because I guess that's the way most people use their phones, and on the web you mostly just scroll up and down, you know.
Yep.
And it's funny to see how I feel like we had a really good idea for something that maybe didn't catch on the way we anticipated, and instead this not opposite format, but definitely something that we wouldn't have guessed would have caught on had really happened in the meantime. So it's been interesting to kind of like experience that change as we just keep plugging away on this and just trying to make it the best version of that story that we can.
And I think you've done like a phenomenal job of cropping these panels.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It hurts to lose your art, I'll tell you.
I mean, you always have to skip something. And if people want to read this story, I think the best version is still on your website, because it's the little things like a small background detail or something like that. Yeah, like, for instance, in chapter two, where they're capturing all of those wizards, right smack in the middle of the story, you have this almost like a montage of these soldiers capturing different wizards for Gloom's family. There are a couple of wizards that are off panel that I kind of like, stuff like that, small background.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They don't add anything to the story, but it's nice to have.
I mean, I love them all as parts of the story, and it's fun for me spending so much time with this artwork and rereading it over the years, and I still find the little things I didn't even catch that you put in there, which is really, I hope that when people read this, if they end up in a situation where they read The Evil Life more than once, they're experiencing it the same way I do, where there are little details that they catch in the background of those panels, because they're so rich with information.
I love, and
that continues even as we go further into the story. There's more in it. Yeah, I know. You love to add that stuff.
Just things that sort of add to a character's personality or to their story, something like that. What should be in Gloom's room, for instance, in chapter two? Should he have? Well, he should probably have tools, books. He loves science. But why not have something else? Like, why not have a book that says cat photos? And what the hell says super potato? Who knows? But yeah, he has a book.
That's a book. One that I was laughing at this time.
Yes.
Chapter 5, we'll be back with Gloom again. And yes, that one, man. Those are just gorgeous panels. I was catching up with that one not that long ago. I just love looking at that.
Yeah,
that's a really fun one.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know what? I think I'll put this. How about we were debating when the podcast was going to go out and which chapters we should talk about specifically. But I guess we're just kind of talking about how it all came together. But you know what? I'll put this out in a couple days from now, and so it'll drop in between chapter 3 and chapter 4. So in chapters 1, 2, and 3, we meet Hester, who's our most normal, like you said, of this trio. And she lives in North Megaville with her family. As a little kid, she does, although we're not going to spend tons of time with her as a little kid. This is almost like – when we made this chapter, to us, it was a flashback, right?
Yeah.
When we made chapter one. And then
originally it plays as a flashback. That's right.
Right. And it was certainly for us, because we had done so much work on this character as, you know, I guess you would say an adult she is. You know, she's probably, and maybe, we don't have exact ages, but maybe most of the time we spend with her, she's in, I guess, her early 20s, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
And so we, at some point we decided, instead of jumping around in time, maybe the story would be best served by being told chronologically. So these chapters got reordered, and that's how this one ends up as number one. But you know what is really funny about that chapter ending up as number one? It is so perfect, because the end, which goes through, I don't know, 20-something chapters, the end of all of this that we've done so far, I don't know, maybe we'll do more, maybe we'll not, we'll see what happens. It's like a perfect callback to that first chapter, and that wasn't even on purpose.
Oh, yeah, without giving anything away, yeah.
Yeah, it's a, like a direct reference to it. So that's it. It all kind of worked out well that we chopped it up and remixed it ourselves into. But like you said, it was kind of just us spending time with these characters, and what happened, and that was I've never worked on anything like that before.
It was so weird, because I think the process was always one of us going, I have an idea for a chapter.
Like, yeah.
What if so and so does this and that?
And yeah, that's it. Exactly.
And that's sort of how it all came together, which doesn't make for like great storytelling if you look at the big picture stuff, but it does make for great like character moments.
I think it does. And I feel really lucky, because it's been. And I think this is a consistent thing that I've experienced in our collaboration over the years, between the Evil Life and our underwater koalas. We've just been so fortunate in being able to focus on maintaining our enthusiasm about our characters and our stories, because it's always just about jumping on to the next thing that seems like it would be really cool to do, you know? And it doesn't feel like there hasn't been any constraints placed on us by anything except, you know, whatever the amount of time we can spend on things in our imagination.
I mean, to me, it's really about the process for me. It's kind of simple. I just want to have something to draw. That's basically it. I mean, it's not that it doesn't matter what I'm drawing. It obviously does. I love the collaborative process and just seeing each and every new script and the challenges that comes with that, just figuring out what would this look like. But at the end of the day, it's just like almost meditative to have like just something to draw on. I think that's why I always like coming back to doing projects like this. It's just fun. It's no more difficult than that. And this is sort of the weird part, just it being out on the internet and for people to read. And it's almost the thing I think about the least.
Yeah,
like the whole thing coming together, being real. I'm just so into the now and not what comes next.
Yeah. Although the now for me specifically, I'm writing the last 20 pages we have planned for our underwater koalas. And I'll tell you what, that is tricky.
Yep.
Because with the Evil Life, there was never a time when we were saying to ourselves, okay, this is the last. I mean, there was a time when you were drawing the last chapter that we had planned. But from my perspective, we were just, okay, this seems like enough for now. You know, it wasn't like when I was writing it, I knew it was supposed to be the end. So I'm feeling a little bit of pressure right now, wrapping up this chapter.
Oh, man, I am glad I'm not you.
Because
I know it's going to work, and I got all the pieces in place, and I even finally figured out my page breakdown just the other day after just staring at a computer screen for like 2 days in a row. But it's really weird to try and – because that story is even longer. You can't quite quantify it in the same way, but the Evil Life, if you were to break it down to traditional pages, is about 130 mm-hmm. that we have
yeah,
done.
Something like that.
And our underwater koalas, they're about 160 that we're going to have. Well, not even about, exactly 160.
Yep.
And yeah, it's strange to be in that place. I know it's going to come out great, and hopefully the next time we're recording one of these, I'll be like, poof, feeling so good since I sent off that last script. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that really differentiate this comic from the thing we're working on right now, because back when we did this, we discussed every chapter almost collaboratively, like what should be in this scene, what should we do next. I mean, you still had to write the chapters, but we sort of discussed.
It's different.
I asked for a different kind of process when starting this other book. I remember writing to you saying something the line of, I want to sort of take a step back, because the burden of writing was not. It's really hard to articulate exactly how I okay. felt back then, but I think I found that I enjoy the story the most when I had the least input on it. Like, I thought the best chapters are the ones where we discussed the least what to do with them, because
you're still writing, when you're deciding those angles, that's writing. Oh, that's you know.
Yes. And I'm not saying there are chapters I don't like or anything, but I also sort of liked reading the chapters without knowing what was going to happen. Like the way it played out in my head as I was reading those scripts, I just enjoyed it more.
Well, I do try to always sneak a few surprises in every time I'm sending a script over. And I'm definitely feel like, even though we've talked about the way our koalas are going to wrap up, I do think there's still going to be a few surprises in there, I hope.
Oh, and I try to put that out of my mind as soon as I get the script. I just try to forget what I already know sometimes is going to happen, just to have like that fresh experience. I try to be as much the reader as possible, basically. And I really enjoyed this process. I'm not saying that this was at all a bad choice of the process. I really enjoyed like the collaborative aspects of the script writing as well. But after having done this for years and years and years, I was ready for something different. And
well, they are quite different.
Yes, and the traditional approach, one person writes, the other draws, that was refreshing. I guess it might have been the opposite. Had we done the traditional route first, maybe I would have gone and said, hey, shouldn't I get some input on the story? Let's discuss every chapter. Maybe I would have done the opposite. But yeah, I guess maybe it's more a sense of I just wanted like a different approach to collaborating on something.
It was very different,
Because we did this for years and years
before
we started working on the story that we were working on now.
Yeah. For Evil Life, it was, you're right. Every chapter was like, it was very much like, okay, this is the thing we both need to see happening inside this one. You know, it's like, it was very much like we would establish the plot together in email. And then I would say, okay, looks like we got the plot. I'll try to write that up. Basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm so glad we have the process we have now with our current story that I don't have to figure out how it's supposed to end. That is a challenge. But in a different way, us collaborating the way we did, it never felt as though it kind of felt like we both owned the characters, or the characters, maybe they own it. Okay, I'm getting into pretentious territory again, but...
No, I don't think it's pretentious. I mean, who can define it?
It sort of felt like the characters owned the story on their own. Like, even though we both wrote it, it's hard to say where did this idea come from, where did that idea come from. It was more like a writer's room type of situation where just ideas were thrown, where ideas were thrown around, and that some stuck, some did not.
I think that's completely true. I agree with that. And I think maybe it's because we knew we had this very limited core cast, and we knew very clearly what their personalities were. Plus, don't forget, you know, we say that we cut one chapter, but there's a whole other thing that I think was very important to us becoming accustomed to these characters and the kind of stories they would be in. And that was our animation pitch that we did.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes. That is sort of what made the whole thing come together. We didn't use any of it.
Yeah. Nope.
But it made us, it put us in a situation where we had to define the story.
Yeah.
In a simple way. Yeah,
that was maybe like halfway through, yeah. I would say, the process on The Evil Life, right? You know, it was like early 2013. Maybe a little bit more than half, maybe a little bit earlier than halfway through, but thereabouts. And we were pitching The Frederator, which had an open pitch at that time, and I had a contact there I was working with. Mm-hmm. And just as we sent in our Evil Life pitch to them, she got fired.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And we couldn't get a response from them if they liked it or not until I kept emailing them and emailing them. And then I think finally, was it Fred? I don't know who responded to us, but somebody over there that was like in charge responded, and they did not like the pitch.
No, they did not. Plus, they felt that it had been done. Like,
they were really already did.
Done this.
I thought it was different, but
it was. They did have like this super villain in casual situations type of story.
Yeah, fair enough.
They did like this,
but not as good as this one.
The tone was different. That was one of the differences, at least.
Whether they picked it up or not, it ended up being really valuable to us because I think it helped us sort of, I don't know. It's hard to say if it directly influenced the story that we did after that, but it just felt like we knew what we were doing at that point.
We had to ask ourselves, like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'm not going to do it for this time, but maybe for our next, or maybe in the future, let's say, because there are some things about that pitch that are might give away certain things that we haven't reached the point of in the Evil Life yet. But at some point, maybe I'll put together, I'll add that to one of our podcast blog posts, and because it can't be that many panels, right? Or maybe I'll post it as a PDF or something.
I wonder if I still have it.
I know I have it. It just might take me a long time to find it.
I'm trying to remember what it was called. Originally the story was called Super Villainy. It was not called The Evil Life. I think it might have been under that name as well.
It might have been. I really liked Super Villainy, but at some point about halfway through working on the story, I realized that supervillain is a trademarked word owned jointly by Marvel and DC. Mm-hmm. And there's very little chance that we'd ever be able to release a story with that name as a comic.
It's so weird that they own a word.
It's so weird. Superhero and supervillain, and both as all one word, as two separate words, and as hyphenated words. They hold joint trademarks on them, which really seems unfair if you think about it.
I mean, it should be public domain.
Oh, 100%.
It should be a word, basically.
Yeah. It's up there with DC suing Shazam until they basically just gave the character up.
I have a timestamp. I have a timestamp on Super Haters. I accidentally found the final pages.
When did we start working on?
August 2011.
Okay.
Man, wow. This is some raunchy stuff.
Yeah, that story is very raunchy. And if you want to read it, it's available on nickmarino.net on the ebooks page. And it's should be in Super Haters Guest Artists Volume 1.
I really like how Mind's Eye came together in this one.
That's a great story, man. We had so much fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Tons of fun.
There is some nudity, so viewer discretion.
Yeah, true. Not necessarily appropriate for all readers of The Evil Life.
Before me interrupting, where were we? We talked. Yeah, so the supervillain owned by DC Marvel, Shazam.
That's a strange thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But they can't stop us from still loving supervillains. So
and saying it as many times as you want.
In the journey of like trying to figure out how to describe this comic to people, because it's not like we started with some tight elevator pitch or anything, I realized that our characters, they're not really supervillains in their own minds. I mean, who is necessarily? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, with the exception of Gloom, who I think at some point really embraces this idea of himself as a supervillain, our characters are like, I like to think of it like they're sort of almost forced into that label just by the way people treat them or the way people perceive them. And that still does apply to Gloom, regardless of whether he could use that word to describe himself at any point.
And you're absolutely, especially with our alien character.
Yeah, definitely with the alien. Yeah. And I feel like that's a really, for me, that's been such a fun perspective to use to tell this story. Like, the sort of the misadventures that cause them to get labeled as villains or for people to perceive them that way is. Maybe it's wrong because, like, you know, I do care about these characters, but it's sort of fun to see them get beat up a little bit and tossed around and
but I mean it kind of reflects real life as well.
I think it does.
Like a lot of people, man, our book's kind of smart. It's not just silly, it's kind of smart.
Well, no, it does. It definitely it applies to the way that people tell you you can't do this, or you know, this is what you actually are. Or this is what you should be doing. You know, it's much less hyperbolic, but I think that it definitely applies. At least that's the way I've experienced it in my life, is the way other people kind of use, they assume things, and then those assumptions sort of, you get, oftentimes you can get forced into their assumptions about you, you know?
And you start listening to people, and you start believing what they tell you that you are as well.
Okay, so I feel like this is a good place to wrap up here.
Absolutely. And we never really discussed any of the individual chapters, but I guess we'll save that for.
But can we end on a
little,
moral?
A little bit. Oh, yeah.
Like some of our favorite cartoons would do.
Words of Wisdom by Nick Marino. Yes.
I feel like the moral here is, you know, if people are telling you things about yourself, if they're making these assumptions about you, and you know that they're wrong, but sometimes you got that itch in the back of your head, like you worry that they might be right. Don't listen to them, because a lot of times they're just feeling down on themselves. They're not actually down on you. And they express that by telling you something that might make you feel bad. That's my moral. Do you have a moral? Is your moral different?
I had the same one. That was beautiful. That was nice. No, but it is. It is. That I think that is the moral of the story, that in this book that – we're sometimes labeled, and if even if we find that we disagree with the labels that we get, if we listen to it, if we hear it enough, we might start believing what people tell us that we are. Man, that is true for this story. And if you can relate to that, read The Evil Life, because that is sort of the point of the story, I guess. It grew so organically. I don't know. I think that's the moral of the story.
Yes, that's what we think the moral is now. It might change in a year.
Oh yeah, we'll when we discuss future chapters, we might figure it's about something else. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, I think we're done, right?